from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the Good Atheist Podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Carissa Hendricks.
Hey, back by popular demand, ladies and gentlemen. Carissa Hendricks is here to join me for a very special episode.
Is it popular demand or is it that you couldn't get a hold of Ryan?
No, it's popular demand. People like you. It's fine.
I am skeptical.
You're so afraid that people hate you. It's hilarious.
I'm not afraid that people hate me. I'm afraid of the indifference. If you hate me, at least I made an impact.
The indifference is fine. I mean, like, as far as they're concerned, they're a bunch of addicts and they just got their fix and it's fine. Like, you're a different form of heroin, right? Mm. Different flavor. It's got cinnamon in it or something. I don't know if that actually, you probably don't want cinnamon in there.
Why not? Oh, I guess you don't want it in your heroin.
Yeah.
But
you don't want cinnamon in your heroin. It's fun to say that. Cinnamon heroin. All right, well, obviously it's going to be a very serious show. It's going to be a very serious show. Stay on the show. Very serious. Actually, the reason we're doing a show probably much later than we should, I'm fucking tired as hell. My brain has not been radio show mode at all. Despite the fact that I watched a really good movie to try to pump me up, you know? with Don Cheadle. And I think it's the bad guy from Serenity.
Oh, cool.
Although I'm not 100% sure. I think it's him. Anyways, great movie. I think it's called Talk to Me. It's about this radio host called Petey Green. And it's semi-autobiographical. Not really. But there's a bunch of parts that didn't happen. Like, he never went on Johnny Carson or stuff like that. But the movie is really interesting because it's kind of like this ex-convict who becomes a radio sensation in D.C. In fact, when he died, there were 10,000 people that went to his funeral.
Wow.
And the thing that was kind of cool about Petey Green is the fact that people really responded to him. He was honest on the radio, and that was the part they were trying to say. That was hard at the time, but it was also a really explosive time in America. There was, right around that time, Martin Luther King Jr. got assassinated, and it was bad. Let me tell you what, people were going crazy.
You know what that reminds me of?
What's that?
That reminds me of, okay, so on the radio, I mean, there has been a tendency for everybody to be very blasé, and then, you know, this guy gains popularity because he's willing to speak out and be something different, which, you know, find out that's what people are actually looking for. Like, a huge contingent of people are looking for something that goes against what, you know, mainstream radio is trying to push in your face. Yeah. You know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of in the Democratic National Convention when Bill Clinton did his speech. And it was like everyone else was just like, rhetoric, 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 rhetoric. And then Bill Clinton actually gave numbers. And that's all anybody can talk about. And all I want to say is clearly that's what we're all waiting for.
No, here's the headline. Here's how I should have read. Bill Clinton is a real politician. And that's shocking to you.
No. The headline should have read, Bill Clinton, the last real politician. Mm. That's what it should have read.
I think that's what I said, right, when we were watching it, when I told you, why does Jon Stewart, why do even conservatives like Bill Clinton? Because he was a real politician. And I think that people kind of forgotten what that's like.
But that just reminds me of that when you're talking about the radio thing. I feel like everybody's being conditioned to be a certain type of thing that nobody wants.
Yeah, we don't want this yapping on about, saying nothing, tired shit. We want real numbers.
But
we're smart.
No, but here's the problem. The problem is that, think about the way this is done, is that you have the Democratic National Convention and the Republican National Convention, and basically you go up on stage and you just talk to an audience that is already preaching to the converted,
it's
right?
True.
So all you're going to do, like, why would you possibly give numbers? Because you're not thinking about the people at home. You're thinking about the people in that room. And you know what? As an entertainer, I totally get that. Because it's addictive. It's a drug.
Yeah.
You're up there looking for...
It's become a show.
Yeah, it's totally
it's
a show. And I don't blame them because it's a highly addictive...
But that's why I said Bill Clinton was the last politician. It's because everybody else is putting on a show. Let me tell you something. Obama puts on a great show. He puts on a great show. But I tire of his rhetoric too. I tire of it. I don't think I think he does a good job. I will tell you. I think Obama did a good fucking job. But I just don't like to really hear his speeches because there's no fucking substance to them. I like Bill Clinton's speech because it did. Because it reminded me there was a time where just facts were important. And we all really... The funny thing is we all like facts. Everybody's always throwing facts around. The problem is they're not real. Mm-hmm. They're bad facts. They're facts that are not real facts. And you know what? Here's the weird thing. The way that it's justified. This is kind of scary. Is that there was an anti-Obama movie that came out recently. I don't know if you heard about it.
I don't think so.
Anyways, one of the filmmaker was interviewed, and during the interview he was asked, well, what about all these people that were saying stuff that was obviously untrue? And you just let it play itself out. And he said, well, there's going to be low information voters, and so they should still be heard. That was the answer.
Hmm.
And I'm like, that is not a valuable answer. You are wrong, sir. You are low information. Then your listener, you know, like how much we should listen to you is also low priority as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I mean, if we took that same conversation and we talked about science and said, oh, all theories deserve to be heard, even the ones with limited to no evidence.
No, that's what the religious...
Bullshit.
That's what the religious right would say. Yeah, that sounds pretty good to them. Yeah,
I mean, I think I could understand what he was saying if he was willing to put that in context, where he was willing to say, show these people talking as a way to point out, hey, this information's incorrect, and look at how many people are misinformed. That'd be an interesting conversation to have. I'd be very interested to have a conversation about the reality of...
The level of misinformation.
Yeah, the level of misinformation in the general populace. That's an interesting conversation, but to just put it on there, that's embarrassing. You should be embarrassed. You are proliferating nonsense.
That's the problem. You are adding to the noise. And the truth is, the masses are not used to being able to filter through the noise. Imagine that we are just a beehive, all right? And we communicate the same way as bees. They shake their asses around and buzz. That's how they talk. They're like, that way to a flower and shit like that.
But you know what? I think we are going to be... The next generation is better at cutting through the noise. I really think so. I did a...
Are studies showing that that's
true? You know
what?
Not only are studies showing that that's true, that people are much better, or the next generation is much better at cutting through the noise and ignoring certain things, which is why a lot of advertisers are freaking out.
Right.
This is something I found really interesting. Remember that talk I did... Last week, that motivational talk I did?
She did a motivational talk to a bunch of ungrateful high school students.
No, they were great. Most of them were great. But what I'm not used to is I'm used to performing for adults or little kids. And little kids are easy for me to capture because you just become highly animated and cartoony.
Well, and I can only imagine the type of... Like, how magical you must be to them. You show up with, like, fucking bright costumes, and the experience
and
is so visceral. You were throwing them around and shit. Like, nobody's been.
So I've always been really good with kids, but just because I know how to hold their interest. And I've always been really good with adult audiences because I know how to control an adult audience pretty well, and I know what they're after, right? It's basically, like, set up expectations.
Keep it simple, stupid.
Well, it's more about, like... Creating expectations for people and then satisfying those expectations. That's what an adult audience wants. You don't... I have conversations about this with other entertainers sometimes because I'm mixing mediums in terms of variety arts. Like, I try and do fire arts and a magic show and all this stuff and try and mix them. But you have to be subtle about it. Because let's say, you're told, hey, we're going to go see a magic show. And then there's only 20% of it's magic and 80% of it's fire spinning or... ballet, you're going to be a little bit upset. Not because you don't like ballet or fire spinning, but because adults really like having their expectations properly managed.
True, whereas and how much priming they had, too, at the beginning. It's like, oh, the ticket. Was there someone doing, like, a particular act that when I showed up, that act was not fucking part of the show?
Yeah. What was really interesting is that I did my talk for high school students, and it's not like I've never performed for high school students before, but I've never performed for 2,000 high school students.
But you weren't really giving a speech either. You weren't trying to just hold their attention with talking, were you? I mean, like, you were doing a proper show.
It was, no. Well, I did my show. Okay, so my motivational talk includes some fire performance, lots of jokes, and two important stories about my life. Basically, I tell the dichotomy of my life of, like, getting kicked out as a youth and being at my lowest point and then winning a Guinness World Record and being at my highest point. But basically, that's a show. And then I give them practical ideas for how to get from one to the other.
Right.
But yeah, the show is mostly talking. And what I found really interesting about performing to high school students, and I noticed it more in this show than I've ever felt it before, and I think it's because there was no stage. I was just in the middle of a gym, so I was really connected to them. I could see all their faces, and it was 2000, so it felt like the bigger the crowd, the more you can feel the nature of the room. And what I really noticed with performing to high school students would be that I would totally capture them 100% and then lose them within a moment. So I felt very much like they were cutting through the noise of my speech. If it wasn't...
Or are they just becoming... This is part of the reason where I'm a little bit... It's not that I'm skeptical. I'm just sort of... There's a part of me that wants to say, have we really factored in the problem of the lack of concentration?
No, I don't believe for a second it was a lack of concentration, because when I would jump... If I jumped to a topic, they would be there with me within a second if it was a new concept. So long as I was moving through concepts and presenting something that was relevant, they were there with me. But what I really realized was that, I mean, I'm used to being an instructor. I'm a teacher. That's what I started out being. So my speeches have always been, like when I'm giving a proper speech, is always constructed with present a point, explain the point with an example of an interesting story, and then prove your point with a couple more examples from science. But what is happening with the students was they were going... Okay, that's the example. Great, I get that. Your story's interesting. I'm paying attention. Oh, she's still talking about the same concept. I get it. And they would, like, you would see them kind of move on as they would have the information. And right. It totally felt, and I feel very confident to say that it was a situation of them taking from my speech what they needed and then dropping off as they not so much lost interest, but had nothing more to gain from that particular section. But then as soon as I would move to something else, or even insinuate that I was moving to something else, they would be back on.
Right, but
me.
I think that only proves the fact that they have a low attention span. You're like, as soon as I change the subject,
mistake low attention span with cutting through the noise. How many times have you been listening to an audiobook or watching a video and it's an instructional video, you're there to get information and you just sort of tap out of it as soon as you've got the information you need? That's what they're doing. They're just doing effectively than any other generation before them.
I guess that's the whole... Here's the challenge, right? Perhaps there is a part of us that responds to that better because that's how our brain is just intended to work. It's probably the way that most animals see the world anyways, right? Short attention span, trying to pay attention to what's happening in the now because you live in a dangerous environment. You're going to fucking pay attention to the now. I think our brains may be wired that way, but here's the question, right? We may be able to gather more information, but is it perhaps that we set bad habits where, you know, the amount of concentration it takes to read a book, for instance, very different aspects and parts of your brains are being engaged than when you're doing things that are quicker. And that is essentially, I think this is the great challenge for the coming generation, is because they're fed rich in one and not the other.
I think that is the rhetoric of a very scared older generation. I really think that's where that's coming from. I've worked with teens a lot when I used to be an instructor, and I still work with teens now and then, and I do not see any of this, and I really believe it's rhetoric. It's old people who don't hang out with teenagers who keep saying, oh, you know, they have no concentration, they're not getting involved.
I'm in my ivory tower, and I have opinions about the youth on my lawn.
But I think if you go and you actually talk to teachers, like proper teachers who really do work with young people, you're going to notice that that's bullshit. The reality of what's going on is much more complex. Like John Green's quote, the truth resists simplicity.
Which is itself a weird oxymoron of a sentence, because that is a simple truth.
Well, yeah, exactly. But the truth resists simplicity, and obviously it's not going to be that they're lacking attention. I mean, maybe that's a little bit of it for some people, but I do think that there is more noise than there's ever been, and young people have to, just because they need to have this skill to get through the world.
I guess it's the new evolutionary fucking... It's its own selective pressure now. Information is the new pressure.
I just feel like we should try our best not to confuse ignoring informational clutter in an information age where there's nothing but an information gluttony as not concentrating. Because a lot of these students know shit. Like, I'm learning After Effects from tutorials from 7-year-old boys.
It's...
Do you think that's because
crazy.
He can't concentrate? I don't think that's because he can't concentrate. I think that's because he's decided to learn. He watches something till he gets it, and then he moves on, because that's what the next generation does.
They have, like I said, I mean, they have the fucking Library of Alexandria on crack in their pocket.
But, I mean, that is a wonderful, wonderful thing, but it is also a huge burden. And I think we need to realize that all these things we're pretending youth are going through, maybe we should really think about it more complexly.
Well, we should think about... Well, there was an interesting article in McLean's magazine. I don't know if you saw. It was called The Broken Generation. And it was talking about, it's like, why is there record rates of depression? And, you know, in an information-rich age, where we're already at very young ages, people are exposed to the truth about the world... may be absorbing all of that information is causing them to have like severe depression.
Also, keep in mind that they're waking up into a generation, and this is very.
This is from my doc.
Yeah, this is very true to me now because it's from my. I know. I'm sorry, everyone.
No, well, only apologize to the small margin of people that feel. What was it again? Neutral about you or something?
Yeah, so...
Damn your neutrality.
Here's the reality, is that, you know, okay, maybe the next generation is experiencing record numbers of depression. Okay, let's look at the rest of that information. We are diagnosing depression a little bit more readily than we used to. We used to just say, hey, that person's been kind of sad for a while.
It's true, it's like autism rates.
Yeah, so it's just like, okay, so there's that aspect. How about this? How about we're walking this generation of kids into a world where it's like, hey, we fucked up the environment.
We fucked up the economy. And we can't stop it.
And we keep bitching about it, and we're not doing anything about it. You don't think that's going to cause them to be stressed out? And all anybody says is, we expect you guys to fix it. Your generation is expected to, you're going to solve anything. And all they keep hearing is like, technology will keep up. But you know what? They have to make technology keep up. That's the burden we're putting on them. And here's the fucking other thing, is that students are put in a position where we're saying, get ready for the real world, get ready and prepared. But it used to be when I went to school, when you went to school, when people even, you know, anybody older than us went to school, we were told, go to college, get a degree in something, and then you'll get a job in that.
Yeah, you'll work for 20, 30 years.
That's a clear-cut road. There's no clear-cut roads. 65%, according to that Shelley lady from the study, we can put it in the notes, she's saying that 65% of kids born today will be working when they grow up in careers and jobs that don't exist yet. How the fuck, as a teenager, are you supposed to prepare yourself for a career that doesn't exist when you know for a fucking fact that college has become a useless endeavor? What are you supposed to do? You don't think you're going to be depressed?
Not just useless endeavor, but also a fucking financial chain of debt where we've really hidden, masked the true cost that we're putting on this burden of educating themselves on people and saying, well, now that you're done, here's $70,000 worth of debt.
Well, let's have a real conversation about that. Like, I'm very grateful that we have, relatively speaking, affordable education.
Sure.
And that we have universal access to education. That's something that's very valuable and great, and I'm not putting that down by any means. And people, there are certain careers where you need to have an education.
Oh, absolutely. But there's always going to be those classic careers that they will not change.
But we need to have some grown-up conversations about certain things right now. If it's going to cost you $75,000 to get a business degree, would you be better off taking that same $75,000 and creating and failing in 3 businesses? Because that's what that would cost, probably.
The experience would also be pretty fucking good. Being in debt for $70,000 is the same thing that you had going to business school where they were just trying to teach you what might happen.
I mean, I talked to a lot of relatively successful people who didn't finish their degrees, who didn't ever go to college, and I really think that's part of the burden of youth right now is that they're getting these mixed messages. I'm fucking giving motivational talks. I never finished college. What? Like, what message does that send to kids? I don't bring it up in the talk because I'm afraid of pissing off all the teachers, but I would love to say that. I would love to say, you know, have a serious conversation about with yourself and what your passion is and be honest about whether or not that passion requires a college education, because maybe it doesn't, and it can be worthwhile for lots of... It can truly be worthwhile and useful, and it can truly be a giant pile of crappy debt. And don't just go to college because you don't want to be participating in the real world yet. Don't take the coward's way out because all you're doing is selling out your future for, you know, partying and drinking right now. Let's have they're not aware of that. Teenagers are fucking crazy smart.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, and there's also that whole, well, what else am I going to do? Right? Problem. All the friends that they have going to these schools, feeling that pressure too. Holy shit. I mean, I think about the kinds of burden that the next generation faces. I mean, there was an entire election in Quebec that was decided because of the way that students were treated. Now, whether or not that government itself is not going to cause all kinds of fucking trouble all over, because the first thing they say when they get elected is like, we're going to separate. And you're like, that's going to cost $2 billion and will be a giant failure again, you fucking morons. But you know what? Caused by one thing. The frustration of youths that said, we don't want you taxing us anymore. And those voices are going to start being louder and louder. I don't think that we understand. Like, these are the adults of the future that you're just burdening with this. They're going to be really mad, especially at the world you're leaving behind. Like, the fucking hellhole. You a part of the asshole generation if you are my age and above.
Well, here's something. I've noticed that I had the same reaction to these two events. I remember when we were having the trouble with SOPA and PIPA, and everybody was freaking out, and we were trying to rally against it, and all you kept hearing over and over again and by political figureheads was,
we need more nerds.
We need nerds. I'm not a nerd, but we need a nerd. And I feel like that otherness about technology, that separation and misunderstanding of technology, yet they're signing SOPA and PIPA. They don't understand it. They recognize that they're totally disconnected from it, and they're marginalizing, by saying we need a geek or a nerd, they're marginalizing the people who do understand the internet, which is pretty much everybody else. I feel like that's the same mentality that's creating these false identities for the youth. And the problem is this is going to be, this is not meant derogatorily, but there's that comment of give a dog a good name. Where, you know what? Teenagers are not stupid. Teenagers are not idle. Teenagers are not lazy or, you know, lack of concentration. That's fucking bullshit. For anybody who actually works with teenagers, they know that that's incredible bullshit. And those ideas are being proliferated by the same fucking people who work in politics and only ever meet other politicians and only have a sitcom idea of what a nerd is or what a teenager
well,
is.
Well, I watched The Big Bang Theory. I think I have a good idea of what
I know,
these people
you
experience.
You know, and even The Big Bang Theory is a pretty progressive idea of what a nerd is in comparison to, I think, what a lot of these politicians have locked in their heads. And I remember when I was watching the SOPA PIPA stuff, I immediately drew that connection where I'm like, it's the same thing as them putting down teenagers that they've never met, that they totally don't understand.
But you know what that spells? I mean, here's what it spells in my mind, right? You have an entire generation that is, their community now is the internet. Is online. And that's a new world. That's a world where boundaries like countries don't mean as much to these kinds of people. And if countries don't start treating their citizens with some fucking respect, why are they going to fucking swear allegiance to you? You are just an idea, America, Canada, Norway. You are a fucking idea. That, at the end of the day, that is what you are. And if people decide that if they abandon that idea, it's a huge problem.
You know what I just realized?
What's that, my love?
I just realized we just started talking. We have yet to announce the topics of the show.
That's because there may not be a topic. The one topic is that today is 9/11. That is a topic in and of itself. I mean, I don't want to tell you specifically about what's going to be mentioned. It's a 9/11 show.
Boo.
We can start the show by talking about our 9/11 memory. Because
okay.
It might be. What's your 9/11 memory, by the way?
Well, September 11th is my mother's birthday. So I remember that before bed, I had cleaned the kitchen. And I think I might have left like a little cake thing in the fridge or out or something like that for my mom for her birthday.
You're what age at this point?
Oh, this would have been, I'm in Francis first year. So I think I was 16. No, I was in Helena's. So 15. I was young. I was pretty young. Well, how many years ago is it now? It was 11 years. So 11 years ago, I would have been 14.
Oh, no, you're making me feel like a fucking pervert. Because when I say my story, someone would be like, you're gross, Jacob.
So, yeah. So I was in junior high school. I came downstairs because my mom was screaming at the television.
Really? Screaming?
Yeah, very, very upset. And I was down watching TV when we saw the second towers fall. And I remember actually it as a day. I don't know if my family's going to feel comfortable with me sharing this information. Should I tell
them? Did they listen to the show?
I don't know if my dad listened to the show.
Tell you what, if it's really uncomfortable, I'll edit it out.
Okay.
Is that fair?
It's not uncomfortable. I know my family tends to be very private. But basically my parents were both kind of in the midst of their depression. They'd both started tripping into a depression. At the time, I didn't know what a depression was. I just knew that they were both a bit gloomy. And
when you're 14, you don't know what depression is?
No.
Wow.
Well, I mean, you don't know. You don't identify it in your parents.
True.
You just notice the house sucks to be at now.
Mm, right.
So, you know, mom and dad were both kind of mean to each other and just generally kind of rough around the edges. And just the house sort of sucked to be in. And my mom had been really upset, which is why I went and got her, like, a little cake. And I cleaned the kitchen for her birthday and stuff. And I came downstairs and she was freaking out. And my first thought was that she was just upset. Like, I totally, even after I found out what happened, I'm like, she seems really upset about this. Like, is this really a big deal? Like, it just didn't occur to me because I'd been really focused on the other wars in other countries at the time. And to me, it didn't seem any different. It was like, yeah, wars, we're at war. This shit happens. I expected this. Like, I just wasn't surprised. I don't know it's if that's strange, yeah. I don't know if that seems terrible. And then,
I think it just sort of I think it just you were born in a generation that didn't feel invincible. Like this was
yeah.
I think that your mom and a bit older viewed the world through the lens of that can't happen to us.
So then I went to school. I went to school late. Everybody did. I went to school and basically there was nobody there. And the classes were all empty. I think I went to school and there's maybe 5 other people in my classes. So we pretty much every class, the first part of the day up until about 2, we talked about what was going on. And I kind of felt, throughout the day, I felt kind of like coaxed into being really upset. Because all the teachers were really affected and they were talking about how this was a big deal.
You wanted to feel some kind of emotion?
No, I didn't. Well, I didn't not want to or I didn't absolutely want to. I just, like, I remember being very aware that there was war going on. And I was not, and I had heard online and stuff like that at the time that, you know, it was going to probably happen a bit in Canada and it was probably going to happen a bit in the States. And I was expecting it. And I wasn't surprised. That it wasn't, like, it was still upsetting. It was super upsetting. But, like, I'm in Canada. That's in the States. It seemed like war overseas, just like when you see terrible things happening everywhere. And it felt really upsetting, but the same level of upsetting as it felt when I saw, like, mothers being shot in the face on YouTube.
Right. And you had never been to New York.
I'd never been to the country. I was very young. So throughout the day, all the teachers were very upset. And then, like, slowly started to dawn on me the severity of the situation and how this was going to probably affect everybody a lot more than I was kind of appreciating it for. And then right before I went home from school, they started talking about how they were starting to release ideas about what the next target would be. And in Calgary, there was a target. They were starting to say in Calgary that because we have a couple of military bases, I guess, I'm not sure what it was that Calgary was a target. And then
everybody thought they were a target.
Yeah, absolutely. But that when they started talking about that, that's kind of when it started really hitting me.
The odds are better to win the lottery than to be the target.
Oh, yeah. It's disturbing. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But, I mean, it was a really interesting progression of the day because at first, my first thought was just like, oh, my mommy's really upset. On her birthday, that really sucks for her. And then, she was like, from now on, my birthday will be ruined, and oh, I'll never enjoy my birthday again. And she was taking it very personally. I mean, and rightly so. She was a bit depressed at the time. And my dad wasn't being supportive because he was a bit depressed at the time. I remember being
very... It was a shitty time.
Yeah, I just remember that spending a day going, oh, this is a really big deal. Okay, I get it now. And just kind of, I mean, I was only 14, so it of course it didn't really hit me. I didn't have an in-depth understanding of sort of the way the United States is like, it's like a bully. You poke him and he beats the shit out of you. Like, I didn't really get that at the time.
You didn't think, well, see, that's where our story absolutely differs. I remember, here's my 9/11 story. I remember I used to live in an apartment that was a cold hellhole, all right? This was the worst apartment I'd ever had, actually. I've had some bad apartments, but this one was the year where in Montreal it was impossible to find an apartment. And the day before we had to move out of one, we had found this other, and that gives you an idea of the kind of compromise that we had to go through. It was a fucking basement apartment, cold as hell, and the only heater was in the middle of the room. It was a gas heater. It didn't heat shit. You know, you'd be in your room just freezing your ass off. Unbelievably bad. Anyways, the situation in my house had somewhat deteriorated. After a while, when you start living with a roommate in shitty conditions, what ends up happening is that you're dicks to each other and it's just like altogether bad. So, roommate situation being what it was, I had moved the television in my bedroom and it was standing in some weird corner. So, I'm sleeping in at the time. Am I jobless? No. I have a job. Yes, I do have a job. A horrible call center job. So, my day off, sleeping in bed, trying to sleep, you know, quite late. And I get a call in the morning. I don't get calls in the morning. Nobody calls me. No one's like, hey, what are you doing at 9 o'clock in the morning? Let's go out and go fishing. I'd be like, go fuck yourself. Like, I am an 11 o'clock on kind of dude, especially when I was younger. And Yeah, so he calls me up and he's like, dude, you gotta turn on the TV. And this is my buddy Ben. You know Ben. So I'm like, fuck I know off, Ben. Fuck off. And he's like, seriously, you have to turn on the television. I swear, we're having an argument here on the phone, being like, dude, I don't have time for your shit. He's like, just do it. I'm serious. All right, fine. So I turn on the TV, and I'm not even quite sure what I'm looking at. I mean, by then, I'm still fucking groggy. But there, this is still early enough that the plane has just hit. That's it. Hmm. You're watching, like, the smoke. The first plane hit. Yeah. No, actually, no. Second plane had hit by then. Sorry. Just as, he called me just as the second plane hit. So they were smoking and on fire. So I turn it on. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? So we have a meaningless conversation where we're just trying to, I don't know, guess what the politics of the future will be. My guess was just, like, they're going to want blood. Someone's going to die. I don't know who, but someone's going to fucking die. A lot of people are going to die. Because I just know. I'm like, this is the country that makes those action movies where the good guy fights something called a bad guy. Mm-hmm. And the ideological lines are so clear that you never step on the other side. No, no, no. You'd never be fighting your brother or your friend. No. Only bad guys. People will wear masks and wear dark suits.
And are usually ethnic.
Right, well, they're very different, this Gary. So we were pontificating, if you will, and all of a sudden I saw one of the towers crumble, like just boom, go down. And I wasn't even quite sure what the fuck I was watching, because I think anybody who saw those towers go down the first time, it seemed like an impossible way for it to go. Like, you were just like, is that how buildings go down like that? Which is, you know, obviously why there's so many conspiracy theories now, because it just looks weird, right? You're like, huh? And by the time the second one went too, you're just like, are they fucking gone? Like, is that it? Is this for real? Like, what? And then just the blanket everywhere. And then all of a sudden you're just sort of like, well, I'm going to ponder things now. And then the next day, obviously everybody at work was fucking freaked out. And they're like, this was one of the buildings. And I just... You know, like, there's that point where you just want to tell people, are you stupid? I mean, again, let's look at the numbers here.
Well, you must have been...
You're more likely to get hit by lightning.
You must have been a little bit more connected to the situation, because you'd actually been there.
Yeah, I remember it was actually a really fond memory. I went to the World Trade Center when I was 17 years old, back in 1997. And I went with my best friend at the time, Quay, and he booked me a ticket on a Chinese tour bus. So what that meant was for 4 glorious days... traveling around, a bunch of Chinese people, me the only white guy. You know, for me, there was not half of my life, but a portion of my life was always stranger in a strange land. You know, my Chinese family, Quay, my Chinese family. So we'd go someplace, and I was the only white guy at restaurants. I'd be just like, I was always the outsider, and I felt it was an interesting thing. You get looks from people, and
you know,
like,
actually,
oh, that's how it feels. All right, I get it.
You know, the more you talk about it, I hope this does not come off as racist, but the more you talk about kind of growing up with Quay, the more I realize how much of that has become part of your personality. Like, because I've noticed that, you know, we went to go hang out with Quay, and, you know, the small component of Asian friends I do have, they tend to have like this, like, quiet, sometimes quiet, thinky, unemotionalness about them sometimes. This is super racist. I'm a horrible person.
No, it's not. Look, here's the thing. In Japan, some people have to be taught how to smile. There's a cultural thing in Asian countries, which is don't show emotion, because when you're living in such close quarters with people, you become so... Like, we all read micro expressions whether or not we know it. The only solution to that is to eliminate micro expressions.
So, but I noticed that in you a lot. And I think that might have been because you spent so much time, you know, with your Asian family.
I think part of that, but I think it's also my family was always, I don't know,
because the rest of your family is very much like that.
They prodded me for a long time. They used to, because I wouldn't really reveal information.
But do you think that, like, chicken and the egg, right? Do you think that part of why you were like that, part of
Could
why
be.
They were proddy, was
Could
because
be.
You didn't fit into the dynamic? Like, your family is... very like the brood is the brood, and if you're not like us, then we'll pick on you. And like, there's sort of this like eat or be eaten mentality in your family a little bit.
It is a pack of alphas.
Not in a bad way.
No,
yeah,
no,
they're just
awesome.
Like really intelligent, funny, strong personalities. And it's not like they're being aggressive. It's just that's kind of what happens when you put a whole bunch of really like big personalities. Yes,
big, that is what it is. It is a house full of big personalities.
Big, confident, funny, intelligent personalities. It's just like, it can be a bit overwhelming. But I mean, I think maybe that part of you being poked maybe came from the habits you
could
picked
be,
up
could
from
be.
Quay's family.
But yes, there was a part of my life that was really Asian, let's just say. That's why I can't stand fake Chinese food. Fucking hate that shit. But at the same time, like, I felt like it was an interesting... There was so many times when I was in that world where I could see the institutional racism at work. And number one, say, coming back from New York, being in the lineup, and one guy being like, hey, are you with this group? Yeah, come on in. I'm not even going to check you. Because it's so many Asian people I got to check. And you're just like, man, that's racist.
That's crazy. How many times do you think people looked at you when they were like, was that little boy lost? Is that kid lost?
Well, you don't see a lot of white boys with Asian, like, you know, being adopted into Asian families. I'm sure it must happen. Does it happen?
Oh, yeah, it totally happens.
It's going to happen in the future, too, I'm sure. Yeah. Someone's going to have to adopt babies. But 1997, we go to New York was one of the stops. And, of course, the World Trade Center was one of the sites that we had to go see. Now, there are two things that I remember about the World Trade Center experience. One was the fucking lineup. And it's a lineup of just not tourists, but people trying to get in the building, too. Because do you know how many people worked in the World Trade Center at full capacity? 30,000.
Oh, my God.
30,000 fucking people. This is why 3,000 people died. You know, it could have been worse, people. It could have been so much worse if they would have just struck, like, not in the morning. The one thing that you can appreciate is the fact that people are not morning people in America. That is what saved many lives, to not be a morning person.
I have to appreciate that. I am definitely not a... 9 o'clock is my time when I wake up on a good day. If I wake up at 9 o'clock, I'm like, man, I got my shit together today. Wow.
I know I'm getting older because I can't fucking do the 11 o'clock thing no more.
Yeah.
Now I'm waking up early.
I woke up pretty early this morning, but that's because any time I work out hard, the next day I tend to wake up at like a good time with the sun.
I wake up early because your damn birds keep me up.
I'm sorry. But you know what? They're freaking adorable, and you know it.
You know what's really funny about that? There's probably quite a few listeners who, if you had a cat, some of the shows, I'm sure your cats were fucking freaking out. And the explanation is in the background. There were some birds.
Yeah, I'm getting in.
Chirping.
Okay. So the
Do they
story,
make bird muzzles? They must be tiny.
The story behind that is that I've been wanting to get into magic pretty seriously. Honestly, since I was little, I have loved magic for a long time.
Well, you love Houdini.
You
forced me to read one chapter of his book, even though it was unreadable. The man could, like, was that good writing even then, or was it just like,
I don't
it's
know.
Unbelievably
I love
unreadable?
Him. I love magic. I've always loved magic. And then, you know, when I first got into entertainment, I got picked up as a magician's assistant, and I just loved it. And I studied super hard, and I've got three.
It plays to your nature. You're a meticulous person, and magic is all about meticulous.
I like that it's meticulous, and I also really like that it's all about being really clever. And I love all the opportunities to be clever. And I feel like magic has been very inventive, but it feels like there's always room to develop more concepts. And
I think lots of room to grow. I'm down with the idea. Sexy,
anyway.
James like Randy kind of girl who also loves cock.
So, right? Okay, well.
That's James Randy.
Oh, right. So.
I was making a James Randy dig.
Okay, I got caught off guard.
It was a cock joke in the middle of just the show. Yeah, I got to keep it lively.
Anyway, so I think some of the listeners know that I went to that camp, that boot camp thing. And part of the goal at that
boot camp? I don't think that's
boot camp,
what it was.
Theater camp.
Yeah, that's better.
And part of the goal is when you walk in, they tell you that they're going to keep making you ask the question, who am I now? Who am I now? What kind of entertainer am I? What do I want to do? And it was fucking awesome.
Questions about the future.
Yeah, it was fucking awesome, but I realized that the thing that kept coming up for me was like, oh, I really want to do magic, but I just felt like I never had the permission, and so I bought Doves, because it's like a being pot committed. Like, when you have to wake up and handle and train and feed and clean and nurture your Doves every fucking day, you really start feeling like, wow, I gotta write a show. I gotta work on this. I gotta get my shit together.
Tough part two is, you know, starting shitty. That's
yeah.
Sucks.
I'm really shitty, right? I'm really shitty magician. I'm really shitty. I got it all in my head. Like, I know how things work, but all the handwork, I'm just.
You know what you need?
Horrible.
You need the Matrix.
I do. I need you to download a Drake to my brain.
You do need it.
Or what I need is a dedicated training space where I can work 8 hours a day.
Which is what you've got, because there is unfortunately no Matrix. Damn it.
There's
no
Matrix.
None that you know about.
Yeah. You know what I need? I need a local magician who's ready to retire, who wants to come and work with me 2 days a week and help me develop my concepts. Because it's hard on my own.
Right. And one who will not try to molest you.
It's okay if they try, but they just can't.
The guys who try,
they have to be small enough
just
to fight off.
Yeah, that's probably, yeah, good. No yeah. Gigantic molesting magicians. Please.
Yeah, just tiny ones that are easy to fend off.
Well, you know, until I think Teller is going to retire one day. He's tiny.
He's not interested in me.
He's exactly.
He's
boys. Perfect. He is perfect. Can we call him up? I know he's a talker. See, that's the problem. You're not a boy, so he probably doesn't want to work with you.
Yeah. I think, anyway. So.
Could you do one of those Tootsie things where you sort of like dress up as a boy, pretend that you're interested in becoming his magician's assistant, something like that, and then he discovers you're a girl
anyway,
and it's like total role
so
reversal?
That's
it's a movie.
Getting off the rails. So, yeah, so that's why you might have been hearing doves in the background. We put them in the other room for this show.
So people with cats, our apologies if...
I'm sorry.
If they went a little bit nuts.
But they can be a bit noisy sometimes. I've been trying to figure out why...
It's not clear. I don't understand bird psychology.
I know.
The brains are little.
There are days where you won't hear them all day, and then there are other days where they won't shut up.
I mean, what are they fucking talking about? Are they trying to, like, make messages to
other
fucking
things? Online it
says
that they're comforting each other, but about what?
Well, maybe we're stressful monkeys that are around them all the time. Maybe they don't like that.
I don't know.
They always, they always seem to be looking at us. Are they still... I think they're still freaked out about us.
I don't know.
It's going to take some time, baby. It's going to take some time. And here's I think, the big problem with birds. Probably a bird like that. Not really good with long-term memory. So you can have a good day, and all of a sudden they're like, who are you? What's going on? Where am I?
Yeah.
Oh, you stupid animal.
Yeah.
Like, it's a bird brain.
They're a bit of work. They're a bit of work. Training them is incredibly frustrating. Not like training a puppy.
Puppy's got a bigger brain.
Puppy's got a bigger brain. Training a bird is like 5 days of work for... almost unnoticeable progress. It's basically the same speed that you gain flexibility.
You know, to be fair, I don't want to say that all birds are like that. There's some
birds
that
budgies,
are smarter than fucking dogs.
Budgies are killer seriously. Smart. There's a tons of stuff you can teach budgies.
Kias are actually, some people believe that the Kia bird is smarter than a chimpanzee. They're better at problem solving. They can solve complex puzzles and they work together. I've seen it on film. It will freak
Whoa,
you the fuck out.
That's here's so
the,
cool.
Here's the one thing, though. Here's the one reason you do not want a Kia bird as a pet, all right, is because they destroy everything. If you have a car, they will take it apart. And I'm not,
Is
not
it just
because
they're curious?
Yeah.
Oh.
You have to understand that this is the level of a chimpanzee here. So they're curious, they want to know things, and they have an instinct to break things apart. It's not that different from us. I think that, in a sense, intelligent species develop a habit of wanting to break things apart to try to understand them, which leads to hopefully smarter animals if that's an evolutionary trait that's advantageous. I think it is. You'll notice in a lot of species. Some species are smart. Other species... What the fuck are doves good at? Well, we've been inbreeding these motherfuckers, but what were they good at before? I guess they're like pigeons.
They're
right?
pigeons.
Right. They're good at eating shit and pooing all the time.
Pigeons are good at lots of things. Pigeons are
good at
figuring out where they gotta go. They're great navigators.
Oh, that's true. That's
they're great
true.
Navigators. They're
Until
good,
we killed all the messenger pigeons,
they're
I guess
good
they're
at identifying shit, apparently. I was reading an article about they can identify things because it crosses... Anyway, it crosses over to dove training. This is really boring to anyone who isn't getting into dove training, so I'm not gonna get into it.
Well,
I
think it's interesting to anybody who's ever had to deal with fucking pigeons, which
okay.
is everyone.
So I've got a game for us to play.
What is our game?
I think we should play 9/11 High-Low.
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 What does that even mean?
High-low is when you say a thing, and then you talk about, like, the thing that you think was the worst thing that came from it, and the thing that you think was the best or favorite part
all
of
right.
it.
All right, I can play
So
that
basically,
game
so you can either do in general for the world, or you can do personally.
No, I wouldn't do any personal ones. I already have my answers.
Go.
You sure you want me to do mine first, or do you want to kind of alternate? How do we do it?
Well, let's do low lows first, and then go high highs, so that we leave on a good note.
The low? I think the low for me was shortly after it happened, and everyone had, like, every country in the world had a moment of silence. There was a vigil, and for like a good 6 to 7 months, America could have just said anything. They could have said, "We want to build a land bridge between here and Europe to defeat terrorism or something." I don't know. And the world would have said, "Okay." There. I've read countless articles from people who bemoan the loss, the great loss of sympathy that America lost as soon as they attacked Iraq. That was the lowest point. I mean, it was even one where I participated in a stupid demonstration. And you know how stupid I think demonstrations are. I was even there because I'm like, this is the least I can do. They're going to do it anyways. It's clear. This was still in the moments where everyone knew that they were just fabricating fucking evidence and just deciding that it was going to happen. And at first, there was a part of me that was cynical, that was just like, well, they've already wanted to invade Iraq for a long time. You know, Project for a New American Century that was drafted in the 1990s that was sent to fucking Bill Clinton. You know, Bill Kristol and his fucking jackass team decided that it was, you know, well, if we eliminate this, people will greet us as liberators. This was a document of no facts and all dreams. And I thought it was just a bunch of weird cynics that understood reality, but that were trying to shape it to fit a narrative. But then I realized that's not it. There's a true core of believers that think that. A couple of days ago, on the anniversary of 9/11, in fact, there were a number of documents that were declassified that were talking to what extent the White House knew about the attacks.
Wait a second. A couple of days ago on the anniversary of 9/11? Isn't today the anniversary of
9/11? Sorry. Well, before the anniversary of 9/11. There were just like a number of articles that were written for that purpose. You got to understand, 9/11 is like a week-long thing. People would talk about that shit for a while. It's not just of the day.
Right.
It lasts for a whole week. Because it's going to go on probably tomorrow and shit. There's going to be post 9/11 parties. Well, not parties, but memorial services and shit. It goes on. But these reports indicated that even though there was that, was it in August, that report that said Bin Laden plans to attack the United States? Now, at the time when they released that document, everyone was like, okay, well, it was pretty general. And yes, there was a briefing on it, but okay, let's give people the benefit of the doubt. But now other documents have been declassified where, no, the threats were much more specific. So specific, in fact, that many of the CIA people working there were asking to transfer because they're like, this is going to happen, and I don't want to be the guy that was in charge when this happens.
Yeah.
It was just clear that they knew that the Bush administration was just ignoring
it. Okay.
La, la, la,
you're
la,
getting
la,
a bit tangenty. So the low would be what specifically?
Would be the moment. Okay, hold on. I want to finish this tangent because this has a lot to do with the whole 9/11 thing because it ties it into it. And I want to give people real information on the show. Because the shocking thing about all of that is essentially the fucking cherry on that sundae was Dick Cheney just today going on, I think it was MSNBC, I don't remember what program, to say that Obama wasn't getting enough intelligence briefing and was doing a bad job. on the same day that report came out being like, you guys ignored everything. And the one thing that they were talking about in the report, the reason they were ignoring it, they were like, the neocons were like, Iraq is the bigger threat. And they believed it. They really believed it. They were like, Saddam Hussein is working with Bin Laden and this is happening. You're just like, you're only choosing to believe that. So I was cynical at the time. I thought, no, they're just trying to manipulate the world. Now, even amongst that low point, I just realized it was delusional motherfuckers who thought they understood the world, and they didn't. And the result of that has been 1 million Iraqi fucking deaths. That is a low point. Yeah, huge low point.
Yeah, 1 million deaths.
1 million fucking deaths.
In exchange for 3,000.
And that is a conservative estimate, by the way. Yeah. Conservative estimate. 1 million fucking deaths. Huge low point.
Low.
That was the cost of 3,000 American lives. Now, I mean, we're not going to talk about the numbers of Afghanistan, the dead soldiers. I'm just going to talk about civilians because that's a number that we can all understand is huge. 1 million. That
well,
was 11 years.
And here's the other thing. Like, I think it's important. Oh, this is very controversial. I'm sorry for anybody I'm offending. But I think that when we're talking about 9/11, we're talking about civilian casualties. And when we want to compare with some genuineness, we should compare them to civilian casualties in other countries. Like, what was the trade? Because I feel like it is a little bit different when we lose men in the military because there's a bit of consent there. Like, they've chosen to be part of the fight, and that was their personal decision. It's another thing to kill civilians. I think that, like, civilian casualties should be held up against civilian casualties.
Well, you know, it is controversial.
I'm sorry if I offended anyone.
All lives are equally valuable.
Yeah, that's not what I'm getting at.
Let me apologize to also many of the fans who do listen to it who are in the armed services, because I don't want to denigrate people caught in this kind of situation, because you said there's a degree of choice. And I mean, like, I know what the choice is for some of these people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, it was never a choice to begin with.
Well, and here's the thing. I'm not at all talking about the value of human life.
No, of course. Hold on. Let me get into my point, because this is really controversial, and you'll understand why I'm hesitant. I'm including this apologetic part at the beginning to be nice, is because there was I had put up a post saying, you know, stop sending soldiers to war to shoot innocent civilians and they'll stop having post-traumatic stress syndrome. And this guy was like, I've been in the military and the people I shoot, they had weapons and it was a decision I had to make to protect myself and blah, 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 blah. And my answer to him is like, look, dude, I'm not talking about battlefield conditions, but look at the facts. Okay, if there's a million dead civilians, you had to have shot more civilians than combatants, okay? They weren't all combatants, dog. And you just have to accept that that's why they're fucked up. No one is a hero in war. There are no heroes, all right? There are only mass murderers that we pardon. That's the sad truth. But you know what? Here's the deal. We sent them there. We put that fucking label on them. And we should have been a lot more careful. I mean, you sharpen your knife, you make sure you only use it when you need to, not just swinging it around because you were fucking angry. And that's what happened. America swung its big giant sword because they were angry, and a million Iraqis died. And that's a really fucked up situation. That's a big low.
Well, and you were saying, it's a million civilian casualties.
Civilian casualties.
Which I'm just saying that all I wanted to say was that it's important. I think it's important to know who we're talking about. Like, a civilian life and the life of a military officer are equally valued, and it's equally tragic when we lose either one. But I do think it's important to make that distinction where it's like, what kind of numbers are we talking? Are we talking about a million soldiers or a million casualties? Because I feel like we have to have different conversations about those two losses. Not that they're different, they're of different value, absolutely not, but just that they're different conversations.
Well, they have different political realities. You know, a million combatants and a million civilians dying, it should have a very different impact on us, right? Because those civilians, they really didn't choose anything. They were fucking innocents. They were just like, oh, I live in the wrong place at the wrong time, and here comes a bomb in my face. That really fucking sucks. What choice did they have? They were cursed from the moment that they were born on that fucking plot of land.
But I mean,
and that's what makes
it's,
it
again, you were saying, like you were saying, it's hard because how many soldiers in the military really don't have a choice either,
right?
You know,
that's a huge problem. How many of them are so poor that this was the only option of getting out, and they didn't know they were going to be sent
or
to
felt pressured by social pressures?
That too. And this is why I'm like, the best situation is to never send them there in the first place, because people are going to make morally bad decisions. We're all human. We can't help it. It's just inevitable.
So, okay. So after your ramblingness, I'll let you ramble for quite a while.
What were the highs?
What's your low low? Like you said a lot of things.
I told you what the low low was, the fucking war in Iraq.
So the war in Iraq was your low low.
The war in Iraq was the lowest of the low.
My low low was that the United States government used 9/11 as a get out of scrutiny free card, and still do, and that's what kills me. Like, I think that they use that to get into the war. They use that all the time. Where as soon as anything's being scrutinized, they just, you know, there was a great Family Guy episode about it where she's just like 9/11, and people just react to it.
11.
Because basically what happened was that something horrible happened to a nation, and then the media and the government and everybody exacerbated it. So, like, basically
ramped everybody up.
Basically every single person got stabbed a little bit in their heart, and then because of actions that were taken right afterwards, that was, instead of being removed, was drove in a little bit deeper. And then the United States government took the opportunity that every time they were being scrutinized, or every time they wanted to do something or get away with it, or the Patriot Act, or blah 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 blah, they just reached out. As soon as, like, somebody would get the confidence up to say, hey, that's not a good idea, they just reach over and twist that little knife again, that little blade in that person's heart, and they'd go, oh yeah, and then they'd back off. You know, they used it to scare the shit out of their civilians, they used it out of their citizenry, they used it to make excuses for things, and, like, for me, that was the big low-low. When you have a government that has that kind of excuse and just yeah. uses it so, so often and without any shame. Just happy to be, oh yeah, no, totally, we need to slowly strip away your rights little bit by little bit, and we slowly need to, you know, basically
well, it was,
create,
you know, 9/11 horrible was a patriotism foreign policies. Ramp up is what it was, and with that patriotism, you can blind anyone. You can convince people to do atrocities and sort of and mask it with a flag. It is one form of irrationality that is still with us. I deal with it all the time where I'm telling people, I'm like, it's just as bad as religion. It is just as bad as religion. Here's the deal, though. I know that we can't just suddenly abandon it. It's the one thing that holds many fabrics of societies together. I admit this, and I understand this, but that's the point. It shouldn't be used as a tool to fucking manipulate
you. Well, and here's the problem. When you go through something, like, I think we should consider this the way it was a trauma for every single individual on some level. It was some trauma. And when it comes to politics, I mean, the government should be an opportunity to make better decisions than we would make as individuals. That's what it should be. You know, we don't always make the best choices as individuals because we're emotional creatures, and sometimes we get upset, and sometimes, you know, we really want to kill the guy who killed our husband, but maybe that's not a great answer. Maybe the government shouldn't be responsible for killing people, or maybe blah, 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 blah. And, you know, as individuals, we can't always think rationally. So I feel like it should be the government's responsibility to be a better human being than we can be as individuals. And the problem is that sometimes that happens. And when you use an excuse like 9/11... you basically take away the responsibility to be that, because they were, the whole nation, the government in the United States was given the opportunity to make irrational, poor, emotion-filled, emotion-drown decisions the way a crazy, single, traumatized human being would. And that's not the point, right? The point of creating checks and balances and like voting stuff is
and
so
bureaucracy.
Is so that we can all make better choices. And I felt like, because of that trauma and because they all decided to not move on and they all decided to make it worse and like use it to help make decisions, they lost that responsibility to the citizenry to be a better version of humanity. And it's tragic.
That is definitely a low point. Very similar to my low point. The one thing you know what my runner-up for the low point was? The erosion of rights. The one thing that, you know, when America said it's the shining city of the hill, I'm like, why torture? Why no habeas corpus? What's up with that? There was even one, there was an interesting article, I'm going to link to it in the notes, about a guy who said, like, why I'm no longer a Republican. And he was like, why don't we just try terrorism as a crime? It is a crime. What's the problem with doing that? If you don't do that, you're going to be filled with a prison full of innocent people. That's why you have laws. Yes, sometimes you fucking release people who are not innocent. That does happen.
But it's better than, it's worth it for the trade of not locking up innocent people.
That's what you have to think about. And I feel like in that whole blood drunkness, everybody forgot about innocent people because they were brown.
Well,
and who gives a shit,
like,
right?
Like, here's the real conversation we should be having. What is the greater tragedy? To lock up somebody who is innocent and steal their life from them because of wrong assumptions you make? Or to let someone go because you didn't quite get it right? Really, what is the bigger crime? That's a real grown-up conversation we need to have as society.
Well, it demands that we look at things in the, you know, the long-term perspective. We just don't apply our emotion being like, no, what if he goes out and he's going to kill other people and all this other kind of stuff, and then it'll be not one innocent person, but many innocent people that get killed. Now you're just like, whoa there, buddy. You're still, again, failing to realize that innocent dude in jail, rotting forever, his life extinguished, his life meaningless now. He might as well be a number. He might as well flush his face down the toilet and drown
and
die.
let's say because we have courts that are much more diligent and less racist and horrible, we let a guilty man go and he does commit a crime. What are the chances that here's the option: either we lock someone up and basically kill him and rob him of his life, or maybe that guy goes out and does that. I would rather that guy did that, because we were trying to be diligent, rather than our government doing that. Because as soon as the government does it, it makes every single person in that citizenry responsible.
It puts me in a position where I still fear the government, because I don't feel like they have the interest of the individual citizen in mind. They just have these scary ideas of the best way to do things. And they react from fear, and that's horrible.
Hi.
The high. Oh, that's a tough one.
I got one.
What's yours?
Should I go first?
Yeah, please go first.
I think, I don't know how to first start explaining this, because so much of what I'm about to say is very irrational, but I feel like I'm not alone in this feeling that it is amazing and important to the world when something really, really big happens, something that shakes people on an individual, on a community, and on a national and international level, that shakes everybody at the same time. I think it is an important humanizing factor because, let's take, for example, the moon landing. When that happened, it made us all feel like part of a single community, the human race. And when we can look at something and have a conversation about it from a perspective of all being humans and the progress of the human race, I think that's really important. I think that's important to progress.
Step in the right direction.
Yeah, and it's important. It's important to no longer being like, you're brown, let's beat you up. Like, I think, you know, like, oh,
your melanin count is different. You're going down.
Are you not Canadian? Canadians are the best. We should all be friends with other Canadians. And just, like, just broadening the spectrum a little bit and being like, it's a global community. It's you know, we're all people. Everybody deserves everything you think you deserve. So does everybody in Nicaragua. So does everybody in Ethiopia. Why do we feel like those people have less value than we do? And I like when big things happen that make us have conversations about the human race and the progress of humanity. And even though 9/11 was a bad thing, a super crazy, amazing bad thing, I do have to say, in my generation, it was the first time I felt that we were mourning as a world. And maybe some people weren't part of that. Some people who hate the United States weren't part of that. But for the most part, I think we were. And I love that I got to have one of those in my lifetime. Because I don't know if we'll have another one.
It was like when Kennedy got shot. It was very similar. You know, like the whole world had that whole, oh.
And I'm not saying.
And then they went to war right after.
I'm not saying it's worth it. I'm not saying, like, those lives were worth that warm feeling I got. I'm not saying that at all. But, you know, silver lining in a horrible disaster. I would love to have a moon landing in our generation. And it's sad that we had to have the equivalent of a Kennedy assassination instead. And we have yet to have the good global community rah-rah feeling.
Yeah, that one would be nice. Yeah? A kind of global achievement.
I felt a little bit of that when the Mars rover landed.
Yeah, it's true. They're a little bit less.
It's less significant because it's now. Yeah, because it's not the first time we've landed something on Mars, but it is the biggest and most important thing we've landed on Mars.
Right, but there's going to be another bigger, more important thing at some point too.
Yeah,
we all know that's where we're going.
But I mean, the Mars rover landing felt very global because there's lots of countries pitching in. And
look at this. Let me ask you this question, right? I mean, you got the moon landing, and that's a significant moment. But then the subsequent moon landings, nobody watched. Nobody cared anymore. Because I think at least now everything is a little bit more diluted, but at least our interest lasts a bit longer. We're still interested in Mars. We can still do
I thought you
job.
Said the new generation couldn't concentrate and care about anything.
I was playing the devil's advocate. Don't you put me in a... Don't you point
me I'm
in
just
a
saying both those things can't be true. So fuck all y'all who have this horrible impression of young people. Fuck
Isn't
you
nice?
And your
Carissa
stupid faces.
Is defending all of your... unable to concentrate asses.
Oh, you pissed me off right now.
Send your complaints to jake@thegoodatheist.net. I'm willing to hear.
Anyway,
that
was my high to feel, even if it had to be mourning, but to feel part
connected to the world. All right.
Yeah, to feel like everybody was on the same footing for like even just an hour
so
was a wonderful experience. Yeah. Hi.
This one sounds just as sort of like capitalizing on a horrible tragedy. But I think that in any case, you have to do that. You should own something that's tragic. In a sense, you have to make it part of your life. Otherwise, you forget about it, right? I mean, we still have Remembrance Day, November 11th. We can at least remember when you're supposed to wear a little fucking poppy. And maybe it doesn't convince anyone that they shouldn't go to war anymore. But hey, it's better than nothing, right? You should remember. There's not a lot of these vets left. But for me, I guess the shining, the silver lining is the fact that in that cloud, I think there was a lot of people that were like, wow, religion does suck, doesn't it? That was the cause. It's not like it's not clear, all right? The cause of that tragedy was very clear. That was religion.
Well, not only just religion, but religious intolerance as well. Like, it was just like, you know, the biggest intolerance towards religion is coming from other religions.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Let's not pretend that atheists are the most
intolerant assholes for just talking about that shit. Yeah, we do talking. We don't do bombings or acid attacks.
Not
or that
only
kind
that,
of shit.
But I mean, I think, and this, maybe I'm just projecting, and I'm totally willing to own that if so. But you guys can let me know if you're thinking the way I'm thinking. But it's just like, I don't think that religious people are stupid. I really don't. I don't think so. And to use a phrase that is super inappropriate for me to use as an atheist, but there but for the grace of God go I. You know, it's just like, it's because usually of a combination of education and where you grew up and who your parents are, you're religious or not religious. It doesn't mean you're not intelligent. It sucks for you, but a lot of the time, this is not something that person had a lot of choice in the matter. And I totally respect that. I totally respect that. Lots of smart people have talked themselves into it, because when you're really intelligent, you can talk yourself into just about everything. And unless you were exposed to the idea of scientific process and being skeptical early on, you could have used that intelligence to talk yourself and other people into believing in a higher power. You know why? Because it's nice. It's really nice to think that you're not alone in your own head sometimes, and that there's some magical being that if you are nice enough to, then he'll make magical things happen for you, and to believe that bad people will be punished. That's a wonderful thing. But you know what? It's just, it can be as wonderful as it fucking wants to be, because it still doesn't make it any more true. And
that reminds me of that quote from Karl Marx, actually. You know, the one where we always say it's the opiate of the people? That's not the full quote, you know? People forget that it's the quote, the opiate of the masses, is not actually derisive of religion. It says it is the spirit of a spiritless situation, the heart of a heartless world, right? It is the opiate of the masses. That's how it's finished. But the point is just saying, like, it's trying to see the niceties in a world that is, you know, Mother Nature's a motherfucking bitch. I said this again and again.
What I was going to say is that I tend to believe, and I'm maybe wrong, and I'm super happy to be proven wrong, partially because I'm a skeptic, but I think that most atheists don't hate, resent, or think religious people are stupid. I would like to believe that we have the foresight to see situations as complex beyond our understanding enough that we're willing to hold that to be true.
So can I now?
But what I was going to say is that I also think that when you are in a situation where you believe that your God is the correct God and that everybody else is going to hell and everybody else is an infidel and blah, 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 I feel like that is a position to be much more of, create a much bigger sense of otherness and stupidity and all these horrible qualities projected onto the other of the person not participating in your religion.
But here's the deal. Now, we can be nice, and we can definitely say that there's lots of religious people who are not stupid. But here's the honest truth. If I was to do, and there are plenty of studies that show that's true, if we were to look at relative intelligence, we know already that that's a factor. The deal is, it's like in any generalization, right? There is some truth to it, and there's definitely outliers. And every fucking outlier is always very loud about the fact that we're not all like this. And it's like, look at the numbers. The numbers don't lie, okay? You may be an outlier. You may be smart and religious, but here's the deal. The stupider you are, the more attracted you are to these ideas. That's just how it is.
Yeah, but I mean, here's the problem with the concept of stupider, sweetie, is that how the fuck are you supposed to define that? Are you talking about book learnings? Because that's a matter of opportunity. Are you talking about genetic intelligence?
Well, there's
because if we're talking about book learnings, that's a matter of opportunity and that's a matter of income. And it's still one of those things where you can say, like, I totally don't think it's fair to say this person's smarter than this person. In what sense?
I've noticed
that the people defining what is smart tend to be the people who got the book learnings. And you know what? That's fucking bullshit. That's fucking bullshit. If you say, you know what? I'm smart. And I'm going to define smartness as exactly what I have. Yeah, that's a bit of a fucking bias. And I think if you're so smart, you should recognize that.
Well, here is the quandary. How does a smart person make a test to test intelligence?
Exactly. Because aren't you going to have a bias towards what you believe to be smart?
But at the same time, okay, here's the thing. I think that our definition of intelligence will change over time. I think it is changing. Part of it is just the way that We explain
creative intelligent, emotional intelligent, functional intelligent, intuitive intelligence. There's a lot of types of intelligence. And you know what? Most of the tests for what we say this person's intelligent and people who are less intelligent tend to be more religious. What fucking test is that? Let's have a really fucking real conversation about what test that is that we're talking about. Because I am really sick of atheists fucking toting that shit around. What are the numbers? What are you testing? Because unless we know, that information is empty.
There's actually lots of different types. I can't speak for all the studies that I've read. Many of the studies have focused on this aspect, where they measured intelligence in the sense of how... Actually, it was interesting because they wanted to measure how capable a person was of changing their minds or attitudes about one thing, right? They measured how close are you to new ideas? How open are you to new ideas? What they found was that more conservative attitudes, more closed-minded attitudes, tended to be more religious, right? Now, here's the thing. We could perhaps I've
chicken
always,
or the egg.
I definitely believe that intelligence is not a matter of genetics, but definitely a matter of the way that that your brain is able to absorb information, challenge new ideas, that kind of stuff. I just think that a closed mind is a stupid mind. And there's definitely a way to crack through that. I'm not saying it's impossible.
What if the situation is that you grew up in a family with not a lot of money, who didn't have abilities to educate you formal mm-hmm. education, and you were in a situation where in order to support your family, in order to support your community, in order to support yourself, you really didn't have time to do any book learnings.
Right. So can I
Why
put a
are we putting
forward?
Those people fucking down?
We're not putting them down, but what if it was just something like we already know that a child has a certain amount of neural connection that he's forming, and if they don't get used, they're gone,
yeah.
right?
Oh yeah.
And we also know that things like nutrition will affect your ability to learn, to absorb fucking facts. There could be a myriad of ways, but here's the thing. If you don't use it, you do lose it. So there are going to be some people where like there's not a lot of neurons firing in that thing, and that is just it. That's the end of the story.
That is dumb stupidity
and uncurable.
I'm very happy to talk about intellect when the playing field is level. But my concern, and you know what? I didn't always think this way, but I have the right to change my mind. And
you certainly do.
And I really have been feeling more and more lately like we're having the wrong conversations.
The deck is stacked with people who have high-calorie diets is how you feel, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And
energy
we,
is the thief.
And here's the other problem
the
is how many times have you heard somebody of quote-unquote high intellect creating an otherness with stupid people? All the time. And
I don't think
it's
defined properly. That's my problem is... For the large part, academia still believes in that whole IQ test. What the fuck? It's been proven wrong. You know, Stephen Jay Gould has a great book about it. It's called The Mismeasure of Man. Read it. That was written in, he died in what, the 90s? Like,
yeah.
This is an old book.
There's also an excellent book called The IQ Controversy, which is very thick.
But we can't even close that door. We're still using IQ fucking tests. It is ludicrous. So you're right. In a sense, we definitely can't use that trope. I do believe that it is the case, but the data or how we measure intelligence is totally fucking inadequate. I will be the first one to admit that. I'm going to say that let's redefine it, and it's still going to find the same results.
I also feel
but
like
let's redefine it. I agree totally.
Yes, I also feel like I don't know. I didn't always think this way, and again, I probably will change my mind in a week.
Probably will.
But right now, I've really, what I've been going through online and what I've been noticing, and as I've been noticing this tyranny of the intellectual and this unbelievable arrogance that's coming out, I've really noticed it. And that I still have to shake. But I think, you know, we need to really look at how we define intelligence and what is it doing? What is it doing to the conversation when atheists and like this is a conversation we should be having as atheists. What happens when you walk in the room with the impression, because we have all these numbers that we have catered to have a conversation about how we're so much smarter, what is happening to that conversation when you walk into a room and decide that you're very likely smarter than that person? Are you really having a fair conversation, or are you putting them down? It's funny because whenever we go to the pub stuff or whenever I hang out with atheists, I don't see any arrogant people. I really don't. And it was, for a long time, I was so frustrated because I heard that trope of just being like, atheists are so arrogant. And I was always like, who are you hanging out with? All the atheists we hang out with are nerdy and sweet.
That's the thing. It's not people who they're hanging out. It's just people who think that the internet is wrong, and they're going to write their immediate thought that popped into their head, right? But, the unfiltered thought of the internet comes out, and for the most part, like, you got to understand, though. I mean, like,
is that coming from a culture where we value a certain kind of intellect, and we put down another kind of intellect? Like, we just put it down. You know, think about the impression.
Well, here's the thing. There's so many different layers to that. Because number one, remember that RS Animate thing where they were just talking about the way that the system is designed is to just put you on a treadmill towards certain paths. And certain individuals that are really quite brilliant at one thing will never be known for being brilliant at that one thing.
There's a ton of research also right now to suggest that, you know, our school systems are not catering to the people who are innately creative.
Right. But here's the deal. There was another article I was reading, I think it was Scientific American, but it might have been another one, where they were just saying, oh, animals have geniuses too. Animals have people that are clearly smarter. I'm like,
that
whole, is it environment? Well, no, not really. The truth is that there are going to be some fucking bright lights, and there are going to be some dull ones. How do we measure that? Well, good question is, how do we measure in other animals?
I think
we should just break it down.
I don't want to have a conversation about geniuses right now, though, because that's a conversation about outliers. That's not an interesting conversation to me to have. A conversation about the 0.0001% of the population.
I don't think that it's divided in that. I definitely think that it's probably a curve similar to the way that, you know, when a waterfall emits a certain noise and it tracks down a very perfect curve. And it turns out that curve is the same curvature as the conservation of energy. Like, ta-da, beautiful curve. It's a universal curve. And I'm like, I think probably there's a lot more to that curve.
Yeah,
I think that probably even intelligence may follow that curve. And there's lots of controversial books to talk about. But again, our problem isn't how we measure it. But there is a real measurement. We just don't really know. And we should be able to admit our ignorance. But we're going to find the fuck out.
I just think it's important. I don't know. My thought process, I've noticed for the last couple of weeks, has been this process of
challenge your assumptions?
Challenge all assumptions. And
I understand.
I have been left in a very uncomfortable position where I've been challenging my own assumptions and going, yeah, I need to really consider that.
Well, you didn't hear one of my last shows. I've been in the same fucking boat, baby. Like, the Leo Igwe show totally changed parts of my attitude about working with other groups and being able, like, I'm not going to take the hard line on certain issues because I'm like, got to be practical. Need to get work done. I want to stop talking and start doing. You know, well, like, make the right choices rather than just the wrong ones again and again.
It's hard too, because this is the position I'm in when I'm on the show. Is that, you know, the entertainer in me wants to come out and entertain you folks. I do. I want to be funny, and I think that as a result, it's pushed me to be a bit more inconsiderate than is necessary sometimes, and I don't want to do that. I don't think. I think you can still be entertaining without being inconsiderate and without challenging your assumptions. But I mean, it's just sometimes it can be just funnier to just be like, those people are fucking morons and say shit like that. And, you know, there is a place for that in comedy. And I think, like, we need to have safe havens for parody and things like that. Because sometimes you need to say kind of a.
You need to vent.
Sometimes you need to vent, and sometimes you need to say say something that's a bit exaggerated to get to your point. We can't always have, like, a conversation totally 100% rooted in exactly what it is.
And you can't take that whole position where I'm just going to take the middle ground, right? Where I'm just going to assume that everybody's right. I'm like, you're going to be wrong in the ferventness of your position, in your assuredness that it's true. But I generally feel that at least if you're on the side of more assuredness, the point gets through. With all that other noise we were talking about.
Yeah, I just think that every once in a while it's a good thing to stop and say,
like, what am I doing?
What am I doing? It taking you back to that teen thing where it's just like, why are a bunch of old white men in politics who haven't seen an actual teenager for 10 years because they're too afraid to get too close to them for getting politically beat in the face? You know, why are they really making all these really sure statements about what a modern teenager really is? You have no fucking clue, sir. You are basing that off of what sitcoms have been presenting, and that's not anywhere near accurate.
I will fully admit, I was at the game store the other day, and I found there's like this new toy that I did not even fucking know about. It is, apparently what it is like it's a combination of a physical toy and something that's also compatible with your game machine. So what you do with a physical toy will have an influence. Yeah, and I'm like, holy shit. That exists?
I really
That's fucking awesome.
I really like the virtual pet one where like it projects it reflects back your room and it makes it look on the screen like you're looking at a mirror of your room and there's a pet in your room.
Shut the fuck
up. A virtual pet, and you can like participate, you can pet the pet and you can throw it a ball and it'll bring it back to you.
You know where this is going.
So cool.
You know where this is going. Everything that Star Trek predicted became true.
Yeah.
We're going in that direction. It's clear where the vision of the world is, folks. We want Star Trek, and we want it now, don't we?
We want Star Trek. You know what? We've got to watch Star Trek after this, now that you've mentioned that.
You sure you don't want to watch Peep Show?
No, I want to watch Star Trek.
All right, we'll watch a Star Trek episode. But then I want to watch Peep Show.
Can I talk about Doctor Who for a second?
No.
Oh, my God. I so want to talk
about
Doctor
Here's the deal,
Who.
Actually. If you guys want to talk Doctor Who and stuff, Carissa... Find her on Facebook. Talk to her about Doctor Who.
Actually, Twitter. I've noticed I've been venting a lot on Twitter about Doctor Who.
Fine. And go to Twitter.
I don't like
the show.
I've been live tweeting as I watch the episodes.
This is my show, so there is no Doctor Who on the show. But there's plenty of fans out there that like
so
that.
But there's so much religious content.
I really don't like the show, so he's not on. He's not part of this show. This is not happening. Shutting it down. If you want to do a podcast about Doctor Who, by the way, you've got a great voice. Yeah? You want to do a podcast on it without me? Because it's not happening with me.
All right.
I think that you need some Doctor Who friends to talk Doctor Who with and to geek out on that. I just can't geek out with you. I can't get into the series. It just feels so cheap. I can't stand it. But you know me. Like, I can look at a really good Star Trek episode and I'd be like, that looks fake. And I ruin things. My
ruin
eye
everything.
Is like... I
have
critique.
A great Jacob story.
I will critique
famous
artists.
I have an excellent Jacob story. So, a couple weeks ago, so for 3 months now, or I don't know, 2 months now, I have been working on getting a studio. And I have been checking out places, and I have been working my ass off, and I have been, like, trying to figure out the income, money stuff, and, you know, talk to different friends, and had some fights, and everything's been really stressful, and finally! The lease is signed and the insurance is purchased and everything is good and everything's filled out in triplicate and lawyers have been called and everything's great and I have a 3-year lease on a bloody studio. And Jake and I went to go see it for the first time today. And this feels like such a huge deal for me. I have an office out of the house that is a income burden that has to be designed, that provides me with a ton of new opportunity, that puts me in a new... you know, professional bracket, and this is so important. And we check with the studio, and Jacob's seen this for the first time, and I haven't asked him to be excited. I haven't asked him for anything up until this point. He goes and checks out the studio. On the way home, I say, so what do you think? And what did you say, Jacob?
Looks flammable.
It looks, I don't know, it worries me. It looks a bit flammable. What should you have said, Jacob? Awesome!
It's amazing.
What a great accomplishment! Let's get some champagne and celebrate this thing that is so important.
But here's the thing: so many of the stresses that you felt, I'm like,
person.
I feel those stresses too. I'm like, oh, income burden.
But that's not your job.
I know it's not my job, but I still feel those.
That is not your job.
I still feel those emotions.
Your job is to be excited every once in a while. But this is the problem with Jake. Jake sees the flaw in everything.
Oh, so much.
So you cannot. You can never, ever, ever expect him. Ever or hope even, not even a tiny little hope, that when you open up that door, because that's what we do. When we go hang out with our friends or like show our friends something or announce an accomplishment, we're not announcing the accomplishment because we want them to know. And if you think that's what's going on, then you need to reconsider your shit. You are saying that because...
You want validation.
And I wouldn't say validation so much as you're looking for that little adrenaline rush, that little chemical high of having someone go, oh my God, that's so great. And that excitement, that rare, like, perfect, amazing, beautiful moment when everyone's happy and excited and it's unbridled and there's no, like, it's just about the success. Because sometimes you have to distill the success from the stress of something. Because if you never did that, you'd never really enjoy anything, because everything is complicated and everything is a mix of good and bad things. But Jake only ever sees the fucking bad things. So on the way out, he said, I don't know, it looks a bit flammable. You jerk!
All right, my apologies. We're going to do the champagne thing when I'm also not generally freaked out about a 3-year lease. But here's the thing, there are other psychological factors that you don't understand. I mean, 3-year lease for an East Coast boy who now has to spend 3 years in the West Coast, and I mean, I miss my friends. I have no friends.
Yeah,
here.
But your
I'm
friends aren't in Montreal. Everybody's moved.
Well, Carlos is in Montreal, and I would right now if we were in Montreal, I would be at his store helping him out.
It would be really nice to be able to help Carlos.
It really broke my heart. This is the first time in his entire life that I've never helped him with his stuff.
We should do a Carlos plug. Anybody in Montreal
who needs computer services?
Who needs computer services? Our friend Carlos, who is a computer genius.
Visit LJX.ca.
Yeah, we hung out with when we were in the Dominican.
I owe him that much because, well, I designed his logo.
Awesome.
Which is, if you're into Escher, you'll love.
Yeah. I know Carlos will do a fantastic job. It would be nice to help support him, but that does not get you off the hook, mister.
All right.
For being the big poopy pants.
I'm not trying to be off the hook. I'm just trying to gain some sympathy here.
No. You.
Now you're gonna get a lot of neutrality for people and be like, I think you should be more sympathetic towards Jacob. Remember here,
sympathetic.
They have a lot more love of me, so you gotta be careful.
Right. Well, I do believe in this situation that you were a poopy pants.
I was a poopy pants. I do admit that. I apologize. I apologize on the air. For being
I had to
pants.
Pick on you.
But here, you know, there's another part too.
People
though.
Like it when I pick on you a little. When I picked on you in that new video, everyone was like, ha ha, brilliant.
Oh, yeah. You know what? People celebrate when I'm wrong. You've seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They love it when I'm wrong. They're like, you're wrong. Fuck you. And you're just like, man, that was an overreaction. But I get it. I know where it's from, right? I speak about everything with a kind of confidence. They're like, how can you say that with such confidence? I'm like, it's just my voice, it's just how I am.
Mm.
You know, it's like that episode in Star Trek where Captain Picard's like, we go this way. And he's linked up mentally to Beverly Crusher. And she's like, you were just sort of, you don't even know
where to go.
What the fuck? And it's just like, I'm sorry. I do this because it's a better way to instill confidence in people. Why should I just always sound like I don't know what I'm talking about? Why submit to that fear?
Oh, you know, I just got totally distracted. You know what I just realized?
What's that?
Now that I have a studio, we have a mailing address for fans to send stuff if they want to. And I didn't look it up before the show.
That's okay. That's okay. We'll. I can even put it in the notes and stuff like that. And you know what? Here's the deal. I'm going to put this out there as one thing that I've really wanted, but I couldn't find any good versions of this online. If somebody can find me a great book on Cicero, I will do a whole fucking show on Cicero, and you guys are going to love it. Like I said, Cicero is a very important intellectual. I can't find a good book on it. So if anybody's got one, please send it over. I want Cicero to be part of my life and your life too. And you guys love the History Fucking Podcasts. I need more information. Send me books and I do more history podcasts based on books. Looking for books.
I like it.
Yeah, you like it. There's one last thing I kind of want to mention before we really wrap things up, because I think we should wrap up the show, the general discussion show. It's one thing that I've
general
noticed.
General junk.
And I don't know if you've noticed this too, but it's just been this trend, is that people are having a lot more discussions online. But something that I feel is trending is people unfriending or blocking individuals that are not agreeing with them over really subtle or, you know, trivial matters. I've seen this a lot happening. And I just want to warn you that this one thing that's really important is that if there was someone who was right on that edge of saying crazy things that you're just trying to, you know, debate, when you're not there, you're not a voice of reason in that person's life anymore. Don't disconnect yourself from people who disagree with you. That is what a sect does, okay? You should have people around you that don't agree with you. Maybe even sometimes people that say things that fucking upset you. Your job is there to try to have empathy, to treat them the way that you want everybody else to be treated. And that's not blocking them. If they're going to block you, that's fine. You can't fight that. But don't be the instigator of that shit. Be the one that's always willing to have the conversation and then not shut it down. You know, even on my site, I don't shut down any comments. I don't care if you come on the site and say that I'm a big piece of shit or whatever. Look, it's up to you guys to talk to that fucking person. Set them straight if you want to, but do not disconnect yourself from that conversation. That's just what I've noticed recently, and it's been on my mind and bugging me. And I wanted you guys to know, because I think this is an important conversation to have. We should not be alienating others.
Well, and what was that research that suggested that when you take liberal people and you stick them in a room with liberal people,
they get
or
worse. Yeah,
they more
get
liberal.
Extremes.
Yeah,
they go to extremes.
And so, you know what? You know what the result of that kind of shit is? That terrible Republican National Convention and that terrible Democratic National Convention, because all those people thought that they were doing was talking to other people who already totally believed in whatever they wanted to do, and they didn't think that they needed to at all have a real conversation about
except
what's
for Bill Clinton
really happening. It's just, I find it amazing that the more dire the situation gets, the less we talk about real solutions. And that's really what scares the crap out of me.
We just double down on fucking crazy. Because you know what? The alternative of accepting the reality when things get bad is just scary. And we don't want it. But, you know, our own lives are patterns like this, right? I mean, when do we really make changes? At the moment where it's almost too late. But you were so forced into it that it was not an option anymore. You just had to move forward. You had to kick your own ass or else you were going to fucking be in a hole and die. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes it really does take that situation. It's the horrible thing about us. But let me remind you that you're the result of descent with modification from, a bunch of monkeys. So.
Well, and here's the other thing that I think. I think that what we need to realize during this convention in the United States and in politics, no matter where you live, is that there really, in the global world, there have become three tiers of things that we need to motivate in order to make any kind of progress. People on an individual level, corporations, and governments. And in terms of digging ourselves out of these horrible holes we're in, I feel like individual and even corporations have made a bigger step forward than governments have. And that scares the shit out of me. And I'm trying to figure out why that is. And I think it's because corporations know that if they piss us off enough, we're not going to shop there. But governments aren't scared of us anymore.
It's true. They're not scared of us. And they have no reason to be. We are very passive. You can have a protest with 100,000 people and the city will not burn. We're a more peaceful people. And there's part of that that's almost scary because you're like, are we pacified completely? Is there a positive thing where you're like, well, as long as you just kind of let it go and let it happen, eventually people who are also this passive replace you. You're like a skin, you know, you're like a coral reef where others grow from your skeleton, you know? And maybe what you need is more stability than just violent change.
I don't know,
maybe,
but
that's
a
solution.
I think that
know.
We need to realize, I just feel like, you know, lots of people don't come from the States, and I'm not in the States, and so I don't fucking have a clue what I'm talking about, and that's fine, and I own that shit. Totally own that shit. But I do think it's an important thing to think about, that we can't let politicians get away anymore with just shouting rhetoric and not talking about what they're going to do, because shit's going down.
Yeah. Things need to happen. You cannot have a platform like the Republicans where you're not saying what you're going to do.
We live in a global economy, and it is important that the health of every nation is important.
Yeah, especially the one that we use your currency as a kind of world currency.
So
get your shit together, please.
We're counting on you guys.
I get paid in Americans. Every year I lose 20% of my income, 20% of my income just from the exchange. And there's no way for me to change. I am now locked in. You guys are my... Like, your economy has to do better, because that 20%, guys, is killing me. So, please fix it. Please fix your world. For me? Just do it for me. Do it for the Canadians.
Anyway, so, get out and vote! Write to your congressman / woman.
Yeah, please. I swear to you, if you're a listener and you didn't go vote, like, shame on you. Like, this is the year to do it. Like, honestly, this is... Don't be silent. And the other thing, too, is... You got to understand that it is every single person who's somewhat on the left, there is a tendency of the left to eat itself. When they don't do everything that you want, you're like, no, it's not good enough. I will vote for no one because they included that ridiculous religious thing at the end.
Oh, look, my God. We didn't even talk about that.
That was not a proud moment. But let me tell you something. You cannot eat your own, all right? You just have to accept that the world changes a lot slower than you want it to. But you got to be part of that change. So...
I do believe that, you know, the world is divided. I really do believe that the world is divided up into governments, corporations, and individuals. And I do think that the power of the amazing individuals will pull us all up. But, I mean, if that is true, that means that every single person as an individual needs to do something.
So that's the message. Do something.
Do something.
What that something is, I'm not going to tell. Because I could be sued. Or go to jail. I mean, you could tell people to do some pretty scary stuff, right?
Don't do to vote and like write to people.
Well, vote's not scary, so yeah, you should probably do that. And I like this whole writing idea and shaming people and holding them up accountable, and even just talking about it is part of it. But like I said before, I think what everybody else can do is not to ignore people whose opinions are different. Talk to them, have conversations, and the best way to do it always is, like, you know, be as civil as possible when you do it. At the very least, you know that you're not going to fucking drive someone away based on how you said it.
Well, and if you can be skeptical enough to be an atheist, to challenge beliefs and to say, you know what, yeah, it might be, I would love to live in a world where God, there was a God, that would feel much more secure and safe, but it just isn't true. I think that you should also challenge other ideas where you're like, you know what, I would love to believe that everything's just going to work out because technology will keep up, but maybe I should have a real conversation with myself and my peers about whether that's true. You know, be skeptical about everything. Be skeptical about your politics. It's your responsibility.
Yeah. Always, you know, I make it a point every day to read stuff that I don't agree with. It sucks. Oh, it's painful.
We need to stop. This conversation is super preachy.
It's true. It is a little bit
preachy. I am super sorry. Where did we go with that?
No, but I mean, I actually, there's lots of studies that indicate that you should do that anyways.
I'm sorry to anybody who thought we were preachy. But I do, I mean, we're not being dishonest. We're very, this is authentic.
No, yeah, absolutely. It's coming from a good place. But you know what? Before we go, before we leave and give everybody a preachy message about, you know, the importance of voting and blah, blah, blah.
Vote!
I'd like to remind everybody that if you love the show and you appreciate the fact that we're now doing two free shows a week, please become a hardcore member. By the way, if you guys are still trying to, you know, those of you that only want to pay $20 for all the backlog of the shows, you have till the end of September, and that's when that ends. That's when that's over. So get your shows now before I lock that shit down. Because that's what's going to happen. But the advantage is from now on, everybody gets two free shows a week. And we're pumping these suckers out. And I hope you guys are liking all the interviews. I've got two interviews I've already done. So I've got Quiet Company that's coming up. That's next Monday. And then the Monday after that, I got another interview with Dan Ingala from Plush Gun. Another cool guy. We're going to be, you know, he's really into politics and he has a cool song. Kind of making fun of Romney. So,
and also, Jacob won't let me talk about Doctor Who, so please find me on Twitter and talk to
me. Find her
Doctor
on Twitter and talk to Chris about Doctor
Who. Nobody will talk to me about Doctor Who.
Just don't like the show. All right, with that, my name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Krista Hendricks.
Have a good atheist day, everybody.
And vote!